John, it's all yours.
Thank you, Herb. He's one to dim the lights.
We got a dimmer out there.
First of all, I just want to say it's a pleasure. It's a sort of a homecoming for me to come back to the Weymouth Historical Society. Did I hear 130 years this organization's been around? God bless you.
None of us were the originals.
As America loses, I know that. Pipe down to 35-year-old over there. I was going to say, usually when I do this talk, as I mentioned, is I'm disappointed I don't see anybody here born before 1950. So I usually learn from the people that lived through it, but I guess you're too young for me. So, but we'll work through that. But anyways, Clem Horrigan's grandson is home again. So I just want to say that. And thank you to Bill Sargent, and it's a pleasure to be here tonight. The Great Hurricane in 1938. We're overdue for a hurricane in New England. We needed one about 30 years ago to have people wise up, and we're staring down the barrel of a gun with this dormant hurricane seasons of the last 5 or 6 years, and actually I'd say it's 10 years since anything tracked north towards Cape Cod, and we could be in trouble. In fact, I'm just going to start you off just by showing you this photo here. That's basically what would happen if we got hit with a hurricane. That's what would flood with a major storm surge. So I live in Watertown right now, but it'll go, the Charles will get big, fat, and swollen, as would the Mystic, as would the Neponset. All right. So, hurricane in 1938, 71 years ago. Little background about me. I'm a historical weather researcher, historical fire chronologist, professional sports announcer with the Boston Bruins alumni. The Boston Bruins, my friends, are back. And I've summered in Green Harbor, Mass., so I'm an old colonial boy of the South Shore. My only axiom here, and it doesn't apply because I'm here to learn from you and not vice versa, because you live through this, about somebody who knows more about the subject than I do, which is all of you, and then someone who thinks that they know more about the subject than you do, which I guess would be. But we're going to take a look at the snapshot of what's a hurricane, the history of North Atlantic hurricanes. The three great hurricanes are the GH-38, the Great Colonial Hurricane of 1635, and the Great September Gale of 1815. We're going to look at the track of the hurricane of 38 and factoids. We'll look at the summer 1938, the muffed forecast, whereas when I was here in November, we talked about the Portland Gale and where they called that storm, and it hit as they predicted. And there was one captain who was forced, we decided to take the gale on the Portland. We're going to look at the record low air pressure. If you're into meteorology, wait till you see some of the air pressures here. Absolutely unbelievable. We're going to track the hurricane. It carves up Long Island. We're going to look at the flight of the Burghards. An amazing story. We have some buck-toothed heroes. Wait till you hear about these people. Well, if they're even people. Connecticut, Kate's House, Battle of Colts Dyke, the Great New London Fire, Rhode Island, the Lucky Moors, the flattening of Rhode Island, something I call wedding splashers, a play on wedding crashers, the Great Flood of 36, the battering of the Connecticut River Valley, mass impact, and then the final death of a monster. Tonight we're going to see acts of bravery and cowardice, acts of kindness and selfishness, providence, luck, and cruel fate, and up until that time, this is the most costly disaster in U.S. history. Okay, and we know now what Katrina did to New Orleans, right? In fact, they're asking for $250 billion, which breaks down to over $500,000 per resident of New Orleans. I'll stop right there. This is a lateral buzzsaw. Nobody was prepared for this because nobody was warned, and we have unlikely heroes. And I shudder to think in this day and age of what I call abundance on demand, or this depression we're in, I call it the great humbling, where it's me first, if people would reach out and help their neighbor the way they did in 1938. By the time it died out on September 28, 1938, 10 states and 2 countries were affected. And just so you know, folks, I'm going to drive the narrative of what you see on the screen. Don't bother reading it. I'll bark it out. Basically, hurricane ratings, you'd look at Category 1 through 5, not to give you the math, but we're basically looking at storm surge. Most people die from storm surge. It's not from the wind. But a Category 4 is 131 miles per hour to 155 miles per hour sustained winds. And this one, GH-38, hits land at about in between a 3 and a 4. So we're going to call it a Cat 3, even though some would argue it's a Cat 4. One should note, and this is the only math, and we'll get away from this, that the power of wind increases as the cube of the wind speed, so that a doubling of wind speed causes an 8-fold increase in wind power. Therefore, a Category 5 hurricane's wind is at least 8 times more powerful than a minimum Category 1 hurricane. Terminology, the eye, it's a clear region in the center of the hurricane that features sinking air and relatively calm weather. Seas underneath the eye are extremely dangerous. However, the lowest pressure will be found in the center of the eye, the eye wall. As warm, humid air rushes in toward the eye, it spirals around and up to form large cumulonimbus clouds. I've got a stutter and a bit of a cold here. Called thunderstorms. This ring of very intense thunderstorms surrounding the eye is where the highest winds and strongest storm surge will be found. And then finally, spiral bands. Bands of thunderstorms that spiral away from the eye wall for hundreds of miles. The spiral bands will be the first thunderstorms that make landfall, and they can cause heavy rains, gusty winds, and in some cases, tornadoes. Storm surge. Hurricane Bob. We were talking about a Category 1. This was just a hiccup. This was a sneeze. This wasn't even... It was a tropical storm or tropical depression. But I was down in Wareham, Massachusetts the following day, and it looked like F-15s laid the place out with some strafing fire. So just think about that. A little hiccup, a tropical depression versus a Cat 3. We're staring down the barrel of a gun. Major hurricane damage, storm surge. It's a dome of water 40 to 60 miles long that moves onto the shoreline near the landfall point of the eye. A cubic yard of seawater weighs approximately 1,700 pounds. As this water is constantly slamming into shoreline structures, even well-built structures quickly get demolished. As the waters move inland, more debris floats along with it, causing further damage. So storm surge is responsible for nearly 90% of all hurricane-related deaths and injuries. 200,000 people died in Bakergunj, India in 1876. 300,000 people died in Haiphong, China in 1881. Wind damage. The force of wind can quickly decimate the tree population, down power lines and utility poles, knock over signs, and may be strong enough to destroy some homes and buildings. Flying debris can also cause damage, and in cases where people are caught outdoors, injuries, and of course, death. When hurricanes first make landfall, it is common for tornadoes to form, which can cause severe localized wind damage. In most cases, however, wind is a secondary cause of damage. Storm surge is normally the primary cause. Finally, rainfall and flooding. Torrential rains that normally accompany a hurricane can cause serious flooding. Whereas the storm surge and high winds are concentrated near the eye, the rain may extend for hundreds of miles and may last for several days, affecting areas well after the hurricane has diminished. That's the smallest text we have tonight, folks, so that's it for that. Now, let's look at the vulnerable American coast. If you can see the population, the darkest red places, if you look at the southeastern tip of New York, that's where over 600,000 people live, as is Boston, if you can look at that. So, if you look at the Northeast Corridor, say, stemming from Washington, D.C., northeastward along the American coast, if a hurricane were to hit there today, we'd be in trouble. Look at this. I love this. This is basically 100 years of hurricanes, okay? They're born off the west coast of Africa, and if you look at them, they basically break to the northwest, and then they tend to hook like a golf shot of mine off sharply to the northeast. Some major hurricane strikes. We're not going to be talking about Diana, Hugo of 1989, Bertha, Fran, Floyd, Dennis, Isabel. Tell you what, none of these rank with what 38 did. So here's the cool part. If we look at the intense New England hurricane strikes of antiquity, an analysis of sedimentary deposits reveal major hurricane strikes along the New England coast in 1100 to 1150 AD, or Common Era, if some people. 1300 to 1400. These are all pre-Columbian. 1400 to 1450, one struck. So that's three that we know, that major hurricanes I'm talking, big ones. And then, of course, the Great Colonial Hurricane of 1635, the Great September Gale of 1815, and a storm that really doesn't get its due, and that's why I included here, and I think it should be included as one of the great hurricanes of New England, 1869. The Great Colonial Hurricane, August 16, 1635, that's an old-style calendar, Julian, before it was adjusted to the Gregorian calendar. Governor John Winthrop says, It blew with such violence, with abundance of rain, that it blew down many hundreds of trees, overthrew some houses, and drove ships from their anchors. The tide rose at Narragansett 14 feet higher than ordinary and drowned 8 Indians flying from their wigwams. A ship called the Angel Gabriel is destroyed. 21 are lost. I'm currently doing research on that hurricane. Bizarre story. I passed to the south and east of Boston, Mass. Okay? William Bradford in Plymouth says, it caused the sea to swell to the south wind of this place above 20 foot right up and down and made many of the Indians to climb into trees for their safety. It continued above 5 or 6 hours, but the violence began to abate. It blew down many hundreds of thousands of trees. The signs and marks of it will remain this 100 years in these parts. And he was right about that. And then he says something astronomical. The moon suffered a great eclipse the second night after it. The Great September Gale of 1815. This depiction shows the flooding of downtown Providence. Saturday, September 23rd, 1815. Noah Webster said that the storm was a proper hurricane, one of the several severe storms that struck North Atlantic shipping lanes that season. It was a very tumultuous season, 1815. It struck Long Island near Center Moriches. Montauk Point Lighthouse was heavily damaged. In East River, wharves were underwater by 3 feet on 10 in the morning, and the eye passes to the east of Hartford and Springfield. The Hampshire Gazette said that a tornado of wind and rain, Yale University in New Haven, 6.5 inches of rain over 2 days. The New Haven Register says that drifted several hogshead of rum and molasses from the wharf. Eastern Connecticut, all of Rhode Island, and East Central Mass was raked. The rain had a salty flavor to it. Houses and trees had white hue from ocean froth, and it whipped 90-foot sprays from the Charles River. So if you look at the major 20th century hurricanes, 1938, you can see the light blue track, and it hooks towards the Great Lakes. 1944, the Great Atlanta Hurricane sweeps and rakes the East Coast. And then 1954, I believe that's
Carol.
Thank you. I lose track of weather after 1938, folks.
Sorry.
Extra-tropical cyclone. As the eye wall diminishes, the duration is prolonged. And that's what happens if you look at the track of here, the hurricane. This thing races northward. We're going to see some of the vital stats in a moment. So this is known as an extra-tropical cyclone. So just let's look at the timeline here. Starting in the lower right-hand corner, 8:30 a.m., September 18th. It's well east of the Bahamas, okay? 8:30 a.m. a day later, it's only moved relative to the north, the west northwest, and then the next day, September 20th, it begins to gain speed as it's just east of, just northeast of Miami, and then look at the movement. The following day, it goes east of Miami to Cape Hatteras in a day, and then from Cape Hatteras, in a day and a half, it hits New York. So this thing. It jumped, and it was moving. And you can just see where it was born on the 10th of September, hitting Long Island on the 21st, and going through Massachusetts and New England throughout the 22nd. So if you look at the speeds, and again, this is the blurry is not your eyes, it's the actual photograph. It starts on September 13th at 74 miles an hour. 4 days later, it's up to 132 miles per hour as a Cat 4, and you can see the progression there, 1, 2, 3, 4. It gets to a Cat 5 on the 19th of September, up to 160 miles per hour, okay? And then it hooks north, and on the 20th of September, it's a Category 4 at 155 miles per hour. Meanwhile, in Washington, at the National Weather Bureau, they're not seeing this. On a Category 3, the following day, 127 miles per hour, on the daybreak of the 21st, and again, it hits landfall the same day with 127 mile per hour winds. Cat 3. Devastating. It's the most costly disaster in United States history up to that year. It moved rapidly up the coast at 67 miles per hour. Folks, that's 700 miles it moved in 12 hours. You don't have a chance, even if you were warned. Landfall winds at 127 miles per hour, sustained at 121 miles per hour. Top winds at 156 miles per hour. At the Blue Hills in Canton and Milton, just down the road, 186 miles per hour top speed winds are measured. 40-foot storm surge in places. Hit at high tide. The seas rose 17 feet in places. Salt water sprayed houses in Montpelier, Vermont, 120 miles away from the ocean. Southern New England coasts The areas were inundated. Most victims drowned. Some had their clothes blown right off. The first impact of storm surge registered on seismographs in Alaska. Seawater destroyed vegetation 20 miles inland. There are stories all across New England, and some of them are marked here. Some communities no longer existed after the hurricane. What about that summer of 38? Record precipitation in June and July. It was a muggy August, September 12th and 15th. 1 inch of rain each day. The rivers were rising. By September 17th through the 20th, constant rain. So what do you got? You got soggy soil, right?
Yeah.
What's going to happen to the trees if big wind comes along? And then on September 20th, the day before the hurricane's the heaviest rainfall. 13 inches in 5 days in the Thames River Basin. Some areas reported 17 inches in 5 days. Soft soil, weak foundations, roots for trees. The hurricane's impact is exacerbated. What's going on in the news Wednesday, September 21st, 1938? The Treaty of Munich, imminent. That noodle, Chamberlain, hands Sudetenland, Czechoslovakia, over to Hitler through annexation. Churchill protests. The Red Sox beat the St. Louis Browns 8-4, but remain 11 games back in the American League. The Lowell Sun says, the weatherman says, more rain and cooler tonight and Thursday. New York Times editorial. Every year, an average of three such whirlwinds sweep the tropical north Atlantic between June and November. In 1933, there was an all-time record of 20. If New York and the rest of the world have been so well informed about the cyclone, it is because of an admirably organized meteorological service. That's a bunch of BS. They had no tools. Washington, D.C., at the Weather Bureau, a 28-year-old rookie named Charlie Pierce, filling in for two vacationing meteorologists, starts to detect signs and argues that the storm would be sandwiched between two high-pressure systems and head directly north towards New England. Longtime veteran Charles Mitchell ignores his forecast. He says, boy, no hurricane has hit New Jersey during my tenure. The current storm is therefore weakening. Let's look at the barometric pressure, the nosedive. RMS Carinthia, okay, a ship at sea, has a reading of 27.85, the lowest in recorded history of barometric pressure in the North Atlantic. It's off the coast of Virginia early in the morning of September 21st. The Red Star's Königstein measures 28.40 and 100-mile-per-hour winds 40 miles off Block Island. On September 21st, a man on West Hampton Beach thought that his new barometer was broken when it measured 28. So while he was at the post office sending it back, his house was blown away.
Wow.
At Fire Island, within 2 hours, it went from a low reading of 29.78 to an inconceivable low of 27.43 on the 21st of September. The father of typhoons, on board that ship that I mentioned, the Red Star liner Königstein, skipper Alfred Leidig, has a barometer reading of 28.40 with 100-mile-per-hour winds. On September 19th, Reverend Ernest Gierzi, an Italian Jesuit with 23 years of meteorological experience, while on board the Italian liner Conte di Savoia, bound for New York, states, and I love this, one of my children will be around in about 3 days. After he checks the weather charts, the barometric readings, and the sky conditions, he says, there's a hurricane coming. He can just tell by the sky. New York City, average gale of 65 miles per hour, a tropical storm. There's 4.5 inches of rain. The city is at a standstill from 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock. Thousands are marooned in office buildings. Extensive flooding of streets and basements. At 8:45, a power failure at Consolidated Edison left all of the Bronx and parts of Manhattan in darkness. The only death was a hitchhiker who abandoned a stall car that had been given a ride. Car stalls out. He says, I'm walking, and he's carried away by the current. Fort Schuyler Road, Throgs Neck, had 9-foot waters by 7:30 that night. We come to the storm's first hero. Two of them, actually. J. Gilbert Finning, 40 years old. Bill McGrath, 30 years old. During excavation of Fort Schuyler Road, during evacuation of Fort Schuyler Road, we just had evacuation day yesterday, Finning slips while pushing an elderly woman in a boat. McGrath goes after them. Both of those guys perish. McGrath is posthumously awarded the Carnegie Hero Fund Commission's Bronze Medal. The Long Island Express, you've heard that. Look at the vulnerable risk of the southern coast of Long Island, the hurricane flooding risk. Long Island is devastated. And the sad part about this is, as Long Island's getting whooped, the word still isn't getting across the sound to Connecticut, let alone Rhode Island. Selfishness. I talk about those me people. Oh, this angers me. Some wealthy homeowners forced their servants to remain in their mansions and cottages while they evacuated, sealing their fate. One account had a family and friends packed into a car that drove off with their servants watching in ankle-deep rising water on the driveway. Some pets and horses were left behind to fend for themselves and subsequently drowned in the storm surge. After a tree fell on his car, a man on Long Island frantically shook a police officer, saying, "That car's brand new. Who can I sue? Who can I sue?" Oh, and there was substantial looting. In East Hampton, trees are down. A devastated village in southern Long Island in East Hampton. West Hampton, 28 dead, 4 missing, 153 of 179 houses destroyed. The Long Island Expressway, blocked off, impassable. Trees fell like tenpins along the highway. Bridgehampton, devastation. Of the estimated 2 billion trees that were lost in the Northeast, 3,500 trees were lost in the Bridgehampton, Sagaponack, Hayground area alone. The elms and locusts that formed an arch a half mile long over Main Street had been planted before the American Revolution, and can still be seen in the canvases of many important artists. When the storm was over, 42% of the Main Street elms were gone. Nassau, Long Island. That's a neighborhood, not a junk pile. Dune Deck, Bayside, New York. The ocean tore an inlet between West Hampton Beach and Quogue. Anybody want to help me with that? I get different...
Sounds good.
Quogue, 400 feet wide and 20 feet deep. Waves broke on lawns 1 mile inland. 6 miles south of Bayshore, across Great South Bay, Saltaire lost 125 houses. Kismet and Fair Harbor lost 91 houses. Oak Beach, 29 houses. Ocean Beach and Point of Woods, more. Fire Island in Long Island, New York, is raked, scoured. Over 200 homes had been perched on dunes 20 foot high. I see just what? The remnants of one, maybe two down there in a tool shed? Frederick Foster Durham. He's 54 years old, the vice president of Fulton Trust Company. New York train is marooned in Warwick, Rhode Island. It's a 15-minute trip usually, and it takes 2 hours. He gets home by 8 o'clock that night. As he's washing up for dinner, as his wife is working in the kitchen, he drops dead from exhaustion and exposure. Have you seen my mommy? At Saltaire, the morning after the storm, a young blonde girl sat on a box. As Chief Assistant D.A. Lindsay Henry arrived, she asked, "Could you assist us in the search for a body?" "Of course," he said. "Whose body is it?" She shut her eyes tightly and sadly said, "My mommy's." Heroes. West Hampton Police Chief Stanley Teller and Officer Timothy Robinson saved 17 people. Yeah, I look at some of these police officers and the selfless actions that they do, the bravado, the valor is the term that I'm looking for. Halfway across the West Bay Bridge, they abandoned their two cruisers and waded and swam the rest of the way. They save a helpless woman and her 3 children in deep water on Dune Road. They led all 17 people to a roof of a house. A huge wave sweeps over the house and sweeps it off its foundation. 3 hours later, they all land at Quogue, having crossed the bay. No lives are lost. Oh, I got one for you. Oh, I got one for you coming up. And it's called The Flight of the Burghardts. So bear with me. I'm going to tell you this story, and I'm going to drive the narrative off the screen. George and Mabel Burghardt and their fox terrier Bitsy and their cocker spaniel named Peter are with their caretakers, Carl and Selma Dalen. They had rented a cottage 75 feet from the top of a 9-foot dune, 100 feet from Dune Road, and 75 feet from the Coast Guard station. They're right on the water. They're kissing the ocean. The distance to the water's edge, 200 feet. Hey, hurricane hadn't come for years. There's no worry. Neighbors have a 30-foot cabin cruiser moored to the dock between the houses. We're going to do this chronologically. 10 a.m., the wind is strong from the north. The sky is overcast. There's drizzle, and the seas are choppy. Heavy seas. 11 a.m., winds shift to the east, then to the northeast, and a right gale is blowing. Dalen reports water bubbling through concrete floor of the garage. Dalen again, the servant. They think it's fresh water from the bay. They taste it. Uh-uh. It's salty. Mabel goes upstairs and puts on her bathing suit. Noontime. Neighbor's boat is drifting. Berghard calls Chief Botswain's mate, James Ketchum, at Rich's Coast Guard Station, 3 miles to the west of their location. And what does he say? He says, I'll be right down. That's assault for you. 1 o'clock, an hour later, radio station WESF broadcasts. The West Indies hurricane is in the mid-Atlantic. It's right on top. Electric power still on. 1:30 p.m., a friend, Bill Ottman, calls and says his garage is just blown into the bay. 2 o'clock, 90-mile-per-hour winds shifting to the east. Water's now 2 feet deep in the garage. Mabel sewing in the sunroom with her back to the bay windows. Not good. Mrs. Dalen tells her, you know, Mrs. Burkhardt, please change your seat. Just as she does, the window blows out with glass shards everywhere. 2:30, wind and rain intensifying. Their bathhouse is swept away. 3 o'clock, Burkhardt tells Dalen to pack clothes and move to the third floor. 10 minutes later, 3:10, a wave breaks through the back door and sweeps Dalen off his feet. Dalen's an elderly man, by the way. 3:30 p.m., John Avery, the Coast Guard guy, comes across the meadow. Let's get moving quick, folks. No time to lose. Let's go. High tide's due at 6:10 p.m. Burkhardt stuffs his tennis tickets for the match at Forest Hills the next day into his pocket. 4 o'clock, Mabel Burkhardt picks up Peter, the dog. George picks up Bitsy, the dog. What's Peter's the Cocker Spaniel, right? The Dalen's much older. They're dilly-dallying. The wind's now up over 100 miles per hour. It's a half-mile walk to the bridge across the bay, and they got to get going. Mrs. Dalen, being nearly dragged by Avery. Avery, the Coast Guard, says, let's go, people. Poor old Carl clings to the fence post back down in the driveway as the group begins to move down the road. Now, this is going to break your heart. If you picture this, if you picture your wife or your husband, if you were caught up in this, just tears my heart out. Carl then sits down on the fence. He's exhausted. His head is down. He's 75 feet behind the group now. He can't hear their call. The wind is howling. Mrs. Dalen is now hysterical for her poor husband. The wind suddenly shifts to the southeast, blowing from a different direction at 110 miles per hour. A 50-foot breaker roars over the dunes. Flotsam drifts by in the raging sea torrents. There's a boat tied to the dock, and they're going to move towards it. 4:15 p.m., with a sickening crash, Avery sees the Coast Guard station that he came from, hit the bay, and smash into pieces. Just then, the line snaps, and the boat, their only salvation, is dragged out to sea. Electric wires hit the ocean. Electrocution is a distinct possibility. Mrs. Dalen, meanwhile, is now 50 feet behind the group, refusing to move, calling to her husband, Carl, who's 125 feet behind them. The Burkhardts, each with a dog under their arms, go out onto a broken dock and lie down instinctively, hoping to ride it like a surfboard. Just then, a large, flat piece of wooden siding comes by, and Mabel, George, the dogs, and Avery climb onto it. The wind had driven the bay water across to the mainland with such force that for about 200 feet, the bay bottom is dry. The Dalens are helpless and forsaken. The Burkhardts and Avery jump off the board and wait for the giant wave that takes them 200 feet out into the bay. 6-foot waves continually wash them off the board, and they climb right back on. They dodge flotsam, cars, jagged glass, and boards with nails moving quickly by them. The dogs are placed on trailer little rafts. Bitsy's washed off, but Peter, the Cocker Spaniel, grabs him by the ear and drags him back to the raft. They paddle around huge chunks of houses and debris. Ducks fly backwards at 40 miles per hour. The raft is grounded in berry bushes on a golf course. Bitsy disappears in the brush. They land 1 mile west from their house at Onek, across the bay, and head to higher ground at the golf course. They wave down a car and make their way into West Hampton. As they're telling the people this, the people are in a stunned state, in shock. We just swam across the bay, and the people weren't even listening to them because they had already been victimized. Avery, what's Avery do? He says, I'm down here, you're safe, I'm moving off to help more people. Some of their personal belongings are found miles away from their house. Eventually, the Dalens' bodies are located. Carl is found near the golf course, meaning that he got swept a mile across the board with a broken leg. Jonna Avery obviously is cited for bravery. Wood is pierced through wood like an arrow. Every street corner now has an armed man looking for looters. 48-hour price gouging. There's that selfishness motif again. And that awful sea smell stuck around for over a year. Quogue, New York, the gymnasium is not a gymnasium, it's a mortuary. The breach at Shinnecock Inlet. We saw the breach of the North River right down the road from here. Okay, Portland Gale, 1898. I still think the Gurnet will be breached one day and soon. Basically, Shinnecock Inlet, the water flows over it and forms a channel. Here's a picture of the Shinnecock Inlet 1 month after it was opened by the hurricane. That afternoon, the Shinnecock Inlet was born. Okay, there are my heroes of Stony Point, huh? Gave you the hint. Bucktooth. They're beavers. 60 colonies of beavers were moved from the Adirondacks. 500 beavers built 60 dams. The dams in Palisades Park held back swollen rivers and ponds. These guys worked all through the night of the hurricane to fortify their bulwarks. And you're going to see proactive action and preemptive behavior by animals when we get to Rhode Island. Long Mountain Beaver Pond doubles in size from 5 feet to 10 acres due to dam made of mud, sticks, stones, and sod. So these little guys sense a storm and they dissipate the flooding. It was 150 yards long and 6 feet high, and it held fast, only spilling 18 inches of water over its top. Take that, levees in New Orleans. Cedar Hill Pond Dam doubled in size to 8 acres. It was 40 feet wide and water rose 2 feet. These guys, what did they do, these beavers? They saved 5 arterial highways used for evacuation. They saved Long Mountain Road, Johnstown Road, U.S. Highways 6, 17, and Route 9 West. Those are the heroes of Stony Point. The plight of the Park City. It's a ferry that leaves Port Jefferson, New York at 2 o'clock on the 21st for a 2-hour run to Bridgeport, Connecticut. Captain Ray Dickerson tries to turn back. The wind shifts. He drops anchor. Some rogue waves fill the hold with over 5 feet of water. At 3:15 p.m., fires under the boilers go out, stopping the steam engine. They are foundering. They're adrift. The anchor finally catches at 7:30 p.m., 5.5 hours after they set out, as the crew bails out the engine room. Most passengers sit in their cars for the entire night. Can you imagine that? The ship is spotted at 7 a.m. the following morning and towed to safety by the Coast Guard. It was a 21-hour odyssey, and also the Ruth R. was blown from Montauk to Block Island, 18 hours adrift. On to Connecticut, southeast coast, slammed from Saybrook Point to Stonington. They're not getting any of this news. Not that they had any time to react to it.
Yeah.
Amazing story here. This is the Bostonian. I can't go into detail. This is a lecture in itself. It's a train that derails outside Stonington, Connecticut. A train called the Bostonian. It's got 275 passengers, returning many students to prep schools, many noisy students, businessmen. They had just been served dinner, and people didn't know about the hurricane, and when a conductor comes down the road telling them that they got to take the dinner away from them that you just paid for, people don't react too kindly. So it's 3:30 in the afternoon. The railroads are ordered to a halt. There's word that 1,000 yards up the track, a sloop has come across the tracks and is laying on the tracks. 160 are crammed into the engine and front car. And that's when suddenly a 30-foot sailboat smashes into the train. Well, the conductor, while he's herding people to the front of the train, a conductor by the name of Brown, I believe, an engineer, by the name of DeSourcy, gets the engine moving on the fourth try, plowing debris and dragging wires. He walks 1,000 feet down the track, this guy. And then what's he do? He dives underwater, holding his breath, and manages, I don't understand this, to uncouple the derailed cars. I don't understand the strength that he found. I don't know what the term is where you find that ungodly Herculean strength, but somehow this was divine intervention. It saved many lives when they finally rolled into Stonington Station. It's a long story. It's a hero story. Amazing story. And then in Danielson, this is one of the signature photographs you see and the one that I often use when I advertise my lecture. This is the tilting of the 120-year-old steeple in Danielson, Connecticut, lost to the hurricane. And this photograph was snapped as it was smashing to the ground. Katharine Hepburn, Old Saybrook, Connecticut, key player in the story. In 1938, believe it or not, she was considered to be box office poison. She had just auditioned for a film that was about to commence production. We'll talk about that in a second. With her friend Red Hammond, she went and played a round of golf. It was very humid and breezy. Well, on the par 3 ninth hole, she scored a hole-in-1. She aced it. She finishes her best round ever with an incredible 31 on 9 holes. Afterwards, she and Red went for a swim in front of the house. She stated about the breezy weather and rising surf, something very special is going to happen. Well, the family had an elegant summer house in Old Saybrook since the turn of the century, and her brother Dick was working on a script there. Kate was waiting to hear if she got the part of Scarlett O'Hara in, ironically, Gone with the Wind. She had just finished making Bringing Up Baby earlier in that year, which was a bust, and the water rose 17 feet high. Dick and Catherine got the family out as two chimneys crumbled and the guest cottage across the lawn drifted a mile away. Family heirlooms are lost in the mud. Days later, when Kate got home, she was on her knees, inebriated, digging in vain, mumbling to herself as Red clutched her shoulder. Kate, we have to go. Digging for her family jewelry. Pathetic. Dick found his typewriter, though, and the scripts were perfectly intact. Of course, those scripts were never made into movies, but... The Battle of Colts Dyke, Connecticut River, Hartford. 1,200 WPA workers. Somebody want to tell the people here what's WPA worker?
Workers' Progress Administration.
Workers' Progress Administration. These are people out of work, doing whatever they can to build the infrastructure.
25 cents an hour they worked for.
And they worked hard, didn't they?
Yeah. There was no other work.
Yep. World War I vets, college students, and volunteers fight to keep 1 million tons out of the south end of the city of Hartford that was devastated in 1936. Another thing, you know, I'm going to mention that there was a great flood just 2 years earlier in Hartford. Army engineers say there's a 50-50 chance that the bulwark will hold when the water crests at 28 feet. There's a plan to dynamite Clark's Dyke should it not hold to save the industrial area. So what they're going to do is they're going to dynamite a neighborhood to save the industrial area. You know, it's maybe that is a smart decision because I've seen so many towns devastated due to natural catastrophes. Not like in the fire of 1872 where you set other fires to stop the fire. I'd never figure that one out in Boston. A photograph here, Connecticut River at Hartford. The arrow points to the Traveler's Insurance Tower. The clock at the old State House stops at 4:10 p.m. At Watertown, Mass., it stopped at 9:15 p.m.
Wow.
Mrs. Carl Carlson, driving towards Guilford, was stopped in traffic as they removed a tree from the road. She picked up a book to read. Just then, a tree came crashing down on her car, killing her instantly. She was reading Gone with the Wind. The river rose 4 inches per hour. Matt Strong caught a 5-pound bass with his hands on Main Street. Frank Fredsall's apple tree was blown over and then later blown upright, and it yielded fruit for a few years after that. Now to New London. I had the opportunity to go down here, and I study great fires of the American Revolution. A woman by the name of Sally Rogers, if you ever go to johnhorgan.com, if you're utterly bored and you wind up on johnhorgan.com, and you go to my audio archive, there's a wonderful interview with her about the great fires of New London. She talks about this fire, the great fire of 38, and then the time that Benedict Arnold burned the city to the ground, 1781. I'm straying a bit. Anyways, this is a photograph of the steamship Tulip along the railroad tracks in New London. The storm surge and 110-mile-per-hour winds cause a great fire. Countless marine craft are destroyed. Talk about getting pancaked if you're east of the eye. Benedict Arnold, as I mentioned, burned the city to the ground, wharves, homes, church, the courthouse, stores, etc. in September of 1781. This is 1 month before the British surrender at Yorktown. There was no need for him to do that. The glow of the 1938 fire could be seen in the cloudy skies from the Long Island and Rhode Island coastlines. This is a huge fire, a conflagration. The GH-38 fire burned dozens of buildings before it burned itself out in the dampness. The wind served as an accelerant. The five-masted Marsala schooner blew out of the water and onto Sparyard Street. It crossed the railroad tracks and then struck the corner of the Humphrey Cornell building, somehow starting a fire, they think. Electric wires in a flooded basement caused this fire. In 1985, another fire destroyed the New London Mills complex. So the fire is reported at 4:30 p.m. All communication in New London went down 20 minutes later at 4:50. The fire department immediately asks ham radio operators to help them put the call out. Fire department stretched thin across the city. Embers are blown into Star, Green, and Pearl Street warehouses. The entire Lower Harbor is ablaze. The conflagration is left to feed on itself as water mains are broken and downed trees impaired firefighters' mobility, so the hose spray is being blown back in their faces. The Coast Guard is the first on the scene, followed by Oswegatchie and Jordan Fire Companies. Whipping winds shifted, jumping over to John Street, igniting the New London News Company. At 11:15 p.m. that night, 7 hours later, another fire starts on Pequot Avenue near Green Harbor Beach. That's Green Harbor Beach, not Marshfield, but in Connecticut. 13 commercial buildings burned to the ground. 89 buildings damaged or destroyed during the storm. In Cheshire, Patrick Joyce is killed when he's hurled against a brick wall of a prison building. One of the few deaths you'll find from wind. Now on to Rhode Island. It jumps the sound again, and they don't know what's coming. There are people picnicking on the beach in Charlestown and Jamestown, in those cottages. Mm. You know, those cottages that require their own zip code called mansions in Newport. The plight of the Moore family. They're washed out at Watch Hill. 11 people, including 3 servants, are crammed into the attic of sturdy houses on the edge of Little Narragansett Bay. Mr. Moore had suffered a heart attack that morning, but he managed to board up his house. The roof was ripped off and thrown into the sea, and the entire family jumps into an ad hoc raft. Huge waves crash on them. Hammerhead sharks follow the raft. Dun, 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 dun. They floated clear across the peninsula, the bay, and then they drift onto a cove on Barn Island. And what's on Barn Island but a barn? And they all huddle in an abandoned barn there. And that night, they watch the glow of the New London fire. The next day, they're rescued by lobstermen. But on Watch Hill, it's no longer Watch Hill. All 39 houses are wiped off the face of the earth. It's a sand dune now. Anybody know that area?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you point that out to people, they can't imagine that there were houses. It was a neighborhood. A 20-mile stretch from Napatree Point to Point Judith. 175 people dead. This is still that Southerner that I quoted at the beginning who didn't listen to Charlie Pierce. That blood is on his hands, I'm sorry. Napatree Point, Rhode Island, Watch Hill. Above, next day, sand dune. The storm hits westerly at 3:50 p.m. 100 people are killed. 194 of 200 homes destroyed. 50 bodies found washed up on the sand dunes. Missquonicut Beach in Rhode Island, raked. Look at that. Island Park, Rhode Island, 19 people dead. 198 of 200 houses destroyed. A tidal marsh in Newport, Rhode Island, the backwash of the hurricane. Conemaugh Beach, Narragansett Bay, another 100 homes gone. Oakland Beach, Warwick, Rhode Island, 100 homeless. A woman says, "My baby has just been blown out of my arms." Jamestown, Rhode Island, 14 people perished in Barrington. Look at the crack in the road there. The Rhode Island Governor Carr Ferry, beached. 86 of 100 boats are destroyed on Block Island. Block Island got a punch to the jaw. What are some of the things that people say? They say, where do I go now? Everything that I own is gone. And of course, I had no insurance. The rats at Brown University, and I'm not talking about the people that work at the bursar's office there. Okay. The calls begin coming in to a couple of local exterminators that mice had infested a woman's dormitory and that rats were seen at the library at Brown University. Were they seeking higher ground at College Hill? Cats and dogs are reported going missing on the morning of the hurricane. Squirrels are moving about in an agitated, frantic manner. It's an old thing about animals, knowing something's going to happen. Providence. The city is a perfect funnel and aqueduct. Again, Providence got nailed in the Great September Gale of 1815, and we don't have much from Roger Williams from the Great Colonial Hurricane of 1635. But the storm surge strikes at 5:15, just as the power goes out and people are leaving their offices. A white wall of water rushes up Providence River, a deluge of water 13 feet high in city streets. They have that marked today in some places in Providence. Mm. I laugh because the Great September Gale of 1815 was 5 feet higher than those. Providence City Hall, Biltmore Hotel. Providence River rises 17 feet in 70 minutes. There's no chance to react to that. Appliances and consumer goods float down the streets from the department stores. A canoe is washed up at Exchange Place in downtown Providence, and of course it stays there for the week after. Nobody bothers to move it. Other things to be concerned about. The Monhegan, a steamer, is sunken and wedged into a pier in downtown Providence. I call this wedding splashes, a play on wedding crashes. It's Joe Fogle and Lorraine Martin. They're scheduled to get married that day on the second floor in the ballroom of the Narragansett Hotel in downtown Providence. Where's Joe? Joe's stuck at the Union Station with his family. 500 refugees have sought shelter from the storm in the hotel. What do? They feast on the wedding banquet and drink all their champagne. Yeah. Joe shows up at 11 o'clock. They're married by candlelight by an anxious minister. They take a short walk on a smelly, muddy street because the water had receded by 10 o'clock to their honeymoon suite at the Biltmore. The Great Flood of 1936. No such widespread wave of destruction has swept over New England in the memory of living men, according to the Boston Globe. It devastated five states in March of 1936. The floods, which followed days of heavy rains, quickly burst the banks of the Merrimack, Connecticut, and Kennebec rivers. As many as 100,000 people were displaced from their homes, and some 100 people died. Today, a vast network of flood control reservoirs, dams, and dikes has been designed to prevent a recurrence of such a destructive flood. This picture was taken in where? It's the worst flood in Massachusetts history. Long cold snaps, deep snows in the winter. Sound familiar? Right? Yeah. Well, what we're coming off of? Yeah. We're in March. It was followed by a mild rainy spring. What was it, 06 or 05, where we had that incredibly wet spring? Again, I'm not good with contemporary weather that I lived through. I couldn't tell you about it. On March 15th and 16th, people gather on bridges to watch the huge chunks of ice float by. Some were the size of automobiles. The torrential rains began, and the Connecticut River crested on March 21st. The annual spring freshet turned into a deluge. Dams were breached. Bridges were dislodged. Railroad tracks were mangled. Roads were washed out, and houses were swept away. 18 miles of Springfield streets flooded. Hadley was inundated. Power went out on March 20th, and the police had to shoot on sight orders for looters. It killed 10 people, left 50,000 homeless, and cost $200 million, and that's in 1936 dollars. By the way, did you see about that billion? There's some email going around. What a billion is? What is it? A billion seconds ago was 1959. A billion minutes ago, Jesus walked the face of the earth. And a billion hours ago, dinosaurs were on the earth. So when you hear them throw out this AIG billion stuff, just think about that. Makes you... Okay, so then power went out on... The entire Northeast came to a standstill, Maine to Ohio. 429,000 people were homeless. 300,000 people in Pennsylvania alone. Ironically, the flood brought Reconstruction jobs back to Springfield after the Depression. Northampton, drowned. Center Hadley, drowned. Springfield Police, they're now the Springfield Navy. Springfield Coast Guard. Massachusetts South Coast, the storm surge hits... We're back to the hurricane. Here we go. So, Massachusetts South Coast. Storm surge hits Horseneck Beach to Buzzards Bay at 5 o'clock. Here's a quote. This is an eyewitness to the storm surge coming ashore in Massachusetts. Listen to this. Man states, he says, "A long black band approaching. A solid black wall of water looked like an unusually large black roller wave coming into the shore with its top being blown off so that it did not curl up and break like an ordinary wave." I don't know if you remember that tsunami in Indonesia and the videos on the internet, how you could actually see it rolling in. Imagine that. 30-foot waves at Horseneck Beach.
Right over the dome.
41 people die in Fall River. Ships, boats, barges torn off their moorings and docks. The oil tanker Phoenix spills its cargo and is blown across the river onto lawns. In New Bedford, 9 cotton mills are destroyed. 10,000 employees are jobless. The New Bedford economy would never recover from the hurricane of 1938. So it was where Springfield got a boon. New Bedford was knocked off the face of the earth, just as Provincetown was knocked out of play in 1898 as a fishing powerhouse due to the Portland Gale. The Acushnet River rises 11 feet. 1,500 people are homeless in Fairhaven alone. I didn't even know that there were 1,500 people living in Fairhaven during that time. The fishing fleets are overdue. This is from the New Bedford Standard Times. Boy, this describes it. This man writes me. Women stood with babies in their arms and watched the horizon in the ageless manner of wives whose men ply the sea. Others went from boat to boat asking questions. Everywhere, the answer was a simple negative shake of the head. Westport, the tumbling houses. New Bedford, destruction. Woods Hole, inundation, flood, a right soaker. Wareham. It looks, who would know that in 1991, right, what, 53 years later, Wareham would look almost the same after Hurricane Bob, like I just said, was just a hiccup compared to this baby. Bourne Bridge. The National Guardsmen, they stand on a house in the Cape Cod Canal. The Bourne Bridge was probably open only 5 years at that point, maybe. Mourn the tragedy of a family that were lost in this house. Martha's Vineyard. There were 25-foot waves at Chilmark. Menemsha. The bridge from Gay Head to Menemsha, wiped out. East Brookfield, New Bedford, Springfield, East Bridgewater, Mattapoisson, Taunton, all suffered devastation. Newton, Fairhaven, Wareham, West Brookfield, Boston. Ware, Worcester, North Uxbridge, Putnam, Connecticut. Downtown Boston, Arlington Street, uprooted trees. Massachusetts State House. Now, if the timing could be better when these clowns are coming out of the State House, maybe at lunchtime. Nah, never. I won't even go there. Look at that, the hatch cell. The Esplanade, Charles River.
Seashell.
Yeah, the hatch cell is a seashell. You're right. Good one. Well played. Lexington Green, where I'm going to be running maneuvers in about a month. Historic Green, Lexington. Again, rendered a battlefield. Exeter, New Hampshire. Peterborough, New Hampshire. You're well up the valley there. Again, this thing moves, for all intent and purpose, right up the Connecticut River Valley is where the eye moves up. Boston Post. 45 killed in wild hurricane. Property damaged in millions. Hundreds hurt by wreckage. No, not true. Now, Boston Evening Globe says, hurricane dead 250. Globe wrong again. Nazi terror rain begins. Daily News. 322 dead in the storm, 37 in New York. Daily Record. Deaths now 390. They're finding dead bodies, by the way. Golf courses, trees with the clothes blown off. Boston Herald. Storm deaths mount to 515. 100,000 homeless. Whole towns wiped out. 250 die in Rhode Island alone. Lost half a billion. That's $500 million in 1938 dollars, Depression dollars. Let's look at some factoids here. So we had peak winds at 121 miles per hour, peak gusts of 186 miles per hour at Blue Hill Observatory, Milton, Mass. The lowest air pressure, 27.94 at Belport, New York. I can argue that at sea, there are, as we talked, 27.43 we saw. Peak storm surge, 17 feet. Again, I would argue that I've heard stories of 30-foot storm surge, okay? Peak wave heights, 50 feet at Gloucester. Oh, 50 my. Feet at Gloucester!
Oh, my God.
700 deaths, 600 in New England. Homeless, 63,000. 20,000 miles of power lines knocked down. 8,900 homes and buildings destroyed. 3,300 boats lost. 26,000 automobiles lost. 2 billion trees destroyed. $6.2 million, that's 1938 dollars, which is, in 1998 would be $15 billion, and if you use 2009 dollars with the value of the dollar, that's about $200 trillion. No, I don't know what it is. So, when I did this lecture, this is, you know, one of my bread and butter lectures. I had a gentleman stand up who said he was born on the hurricane of 38, premature. There were a lot of preemies born that day due to the low air pressure. So imagine you got a hurricane on, these poor pregnant women have to be rushed to the hospital to give birth. And Shirley Ann Gatz was born at 3:28 at Eastern Long Island, in the Eastern Long Island Hospital, just as the roof was blown off and flooded the delivery room. Other hurricanes, Great Atlantic Hurricane, 1944. Edna, 1954. All these hit New England. Carol, 1954. Yeah, Carol. See, Carol basically followed the same track of 38.
Two of them.
Right up the Connecticut.
Diane. Donna. Donna also followed the same track, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where are the big ones named? Well, they didn't start naming them until the after World War II, but 1938 is up there. Andrew, of course, they don't have Katrina. This was graph was made before Katrina. I don't mean to be cruel, but some people said that, no, I'm not going to go there, about New Orleans needing a good scrubbing, but I didn't say that. When the Cyclops comes, scientific studies have shown that a gallon of milk and a loaf of bread are not your best protection against a major storm. It's a New England tradition. My wife is from Spokane, Washington. She says when it snows, stay away from all stores, because they go for bread. The poor cows, she says, must be limping around. But they go for bread and milk. And check the tides and stay away from the beach. When they tell you to leave, you leave. Don't panic in a traffic jam. Shut off your engine to conserve fuel. Your car is going to become your house for maybe up to a day or 2 days. Always have some sort of safety pack in your car. Candy, too. And make friends with your neighbors, too. Get a conglomerate going instantaneously. And you'll need that in the coming years as well. Winds will shift, so don't count on the wind to blow constantly in one direction. And it's hard to say this because you have to change it out all the time. Carry clean drinking water if you can. Stay away from down power lines and, if possible, water containing down lines. Be aware that trees and houses can topple in an instant. Don't swim against the current. If you're within 2 miles of the coast, you're vulnerable to storm surge. And like I like to say, if you're a clown, you will drown. My resources, A Wind to Shake the World, a marvelous book by Everett Allen. All right, Scotty. You gave me that book. Sherry Burns. Yeah. I had the book on tape. Oh, what a marvelous read. I listen to it whenever I give this talk as I drive down. Oh, if you get that, ladies and gentlemen, The Great Hurricane 1938, it's a book on CD. You'll enjoy it immensely. What a great book Sherry does. And Aram Gutsuzian does a great book on the hurricane of 38. Actually, that's my last year. I do something called the New England History Festival. Actually, the date is November 14th, 2009. That's old. I should have changed that out. I'm going to be doing the Great Waters Vineyard water spout, which was a water spout that touched down in 1896. I'm also going to be talking about Carrington's solar flare of 1859, a major solar flare. And we'll have Abigail Adams there. I'm going to have John F. Kennedy there. These are portrayers. I just signed Diane Rapoport for The Naked Quaker. and I'm trying to land Galileo. So if you're interested, historyfestival.org. And that is my story, my friends. You've been a wonderful audience. Now, you have to educate me. I want to hear your stories. Thank you. Anybody want to raise their hand and offer up a ditty?
I'm a drunk.
I know. Yes, please.
Well, I brought some pictures with me, but I was only 3 years old, and I can remember, I have vivid memories of the hurricane, and we were just sitting around, and some man was walking down the street. My grandmother said, look at how the wind's blowing. He's holding his hat on his head. And then he, like, walked up our walk, our front walk, and that man's coming to our house, and we don't even know him. And so he knocked on the door, and he said, could I come in for a minute because the wind is blowing so hard?
Okay.
And he came in, and we, you know, he just had gotten in the house, and the trees started going down, like, one right after.
What town?
Springfield,
Massachusetts. Wow, okay, so you're right in the path.
Yeah, path. So I brought the pictures with me.
Oh, I'd love to see them.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And any other recollections? Yes. Even though I don't believe any of you were around during 1938, but I'll play along with you.
I was 11 years old. 11 years old.
Wow.
I was playing across the street from my house. We lived on a main drag, and there were stores. And we were jumping, letting the wind blow us. We were having so much fun. And then the windows started breaking in all the stores. And my mother called me to come home. But then the next morning, we found out that my mother's uncle and his wife, they were 70 years old. They had been summering in Falmouth, New Silver Beach, since 1918 or 16, I forget. And they drowned their house.
Oh. Wow.
And they were seen on the roof of the house. They were told to leave. And he said, I've seen worse storms than this. I've been here since, you know, all those years. So then when they decided to leave, he went down to to start his car in the garage. It was all flooded. Couldn't start it. So they were seen floating down the street on the top of the roof. There were newspaper accounts of it. It said that she had, I forget how many thousands of dollars worth of jewelry on her. She was deaf, too. She couldn't hear at all. And so they found them in Buzzards Bay the next day. It's kind of sad.
Tragic. My dad tried to play Mary Poppins that day in Brent Rock, across from the Fairview Restaurant. He took my great-grandfather's best umbrella and jumped off the garage roof and broke the umbrella, and he got what was known as red bottom due to that. Does anybody else have one?
No.
Yes, sir.
I was in high school when it happened, and we got out of school, and we immediately went to Weston Park and crawled up some young trees, and the wind blew us back and forth.
Really, like a koala on a eucalyptus
yeah.
tree.
Oh, we had a lot of fun.
Where was this? What town?
Weymouth.
Oh, okay.
Weymouth.
Wow.
And we went home and went to bed. When we got up the next morning, you couldn't get up and down Washington Street. All the elm trees had been blown down onto Washington Street.
Wow.
Yeah. Out the hill there.
Wow. Wow. Anybody else? Yes.
I was brought up in Medford, Mass. And I was 14 years old. I took my Brownie camera out after the storm. But the street I lived on, 18 trees came down, elm. But what surprised me when I looked at them afterwards, they'd cross the street, like when instead of going in on a house, they all blocked the street, the 18 trees. So it was a beautiful street before that. Those huge elms coming down. They probably would have died of the Dutch elm, I don't know, but
They were all prone due to that flooding.
Yeah,
and the wet soil.
I think it was the wet soil, yeah. The next street had a school on it, the Lincoln School, and in it we had a voting booth. It was a tin building, and that just collapsed. I have a picture of that somewhere. I couldn't find it. I would have brought that.
In April of 1941, rather, there were on April 21st, 1941, the Great Brent Rock Fire began and burned Ocean Bluff in Brent Rock, and I do a lecture on that every year in Marshfield, and people come out with their marvelous stories. But that day in Massachusetts,
There were over 200 fires because it was a very dry condition. And what was laying on the ground of the forest due to the hurricane of 1938? Dried trees. So they went up like a tinderbox. Okay, it was kindling wood caused by the hurricane. Does anybody else?
When was the 1944 hurricane? Okay.
1944. Next?
I was gonna say.
Oh, no. Under the day?
Yeah.
I'm going to take that for a called strike. I don't have that. I don't have that. That's.
Well, there was in the Navy. We were coming up convoys. We got into quite a storm. I was wondering if it was, that's what we
were had. You in Bull Halsey's fleet when that man...
But he wasn't in the... Here, he was over the Pacific.
But you know about that story where he took his...
Yeah,
there's another guy I should have listened to, the weatherman. Does anybody else, before we close, have any comments, even if you didn't?
No, thank you very much.
My father said, because he lived in Dorchester at the time, and he was elementary school, and he said, you know, he remembers looking out the window and watching it, whatever, but he said, the next day, we were climbing over trees that had landed on cars to go to school. He said, they didn't give us the day off.
Did they have school?
They actually had school the next day.
Oh, gee.
Yes.
Because he had weathermen, and they told him that the tornadoes
cyclone.
Typhoons.
Typhoons, yeah.
Typhoons out there. They came up and went to the east, and his fleet was going to the west, and the typhoon was going to the west at one time.
One last story that I didn't bring up here, and I try to modify. There's so many different stories I could go on for hours and hours and hours. A man with a chicken farm in Long Island, some of his chickens are found in Rhode Island.
Oh, Rhode Island Reds.
So, thank you very much. You've been a great audience. Good night.
Thank you.
Very nice. Thank you.
Thank you.